Beloved listeners, when you visit the APC's headquarters in Harris Street, you will observe, sitting beside the ATM, a facsimile of Doctor Who's TARDIS booth. Now, we're using it tonight. It still works. It's remarkable, because we're going to go back in time to a couple of different points to tell you a really important story. Hold on tight. We're whizzing back 3.6 million years into Tanzania. And a couple of early humans, three of them, in fact, are walking through volcanic ash. As you can see, their tracks are being covered by layers of dust. They're being preserved and fossilised. And then in 1978, archaeologists will rediscover them. Hop back in the TARDIS. Now, it's 50 years ago and we're on the moon. Neil Armstrong has taken a few tentative steps. And like our earliest ancestors, his footprints were still visible. Both, of course, enormously significant, but only one set of prints is protected, something that my next guest hopes to change. Michelle Hanlon is the co-founder and president of For All Moonkind. It's a not-for-profit intent on preserving human cultural heritage on the lunar surface. And Michelle is also Professor of Aviation and Space Law at the University of Mississippi, and she joins us now. Welcome.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Neil Armstrong's footprints, you were shocked to discover that they're not formally recognized as human heritage.
That's right. I was actually shocked and a little bit appalled, because I believe those footsteps, those footprints, actually memorialize one of the greatest, if not the greatest, technological achievement in human history. I think it's a travesty that we aren't recognizing those boot prints the same way we recognize those footsteps that you so eloquently spoke about in Tanzania. These are human achievements that mark the incredible evolution of our species. And I hope that another 3 million years from now, somebody will go to see those boot prints. They won't have to be covered up, because we would have done such a good job preserving them.
Of course, here on Earth, the international community identifies important sites by plonking them on the World Heritage List. It's a convention signed by 193 nations, a couple of Australian sites on the list. There's Kakadu and our poor old Great Barrier Reef. But there's no law against running over the first boot prints imprinted on the moon, is there? Or erasing them, or carving them out of the moon's surface and selling them on eBay.
That's absolutely right. And, you know, the World Heritage Convention is a great example of the international community coming together and understanding how important our shared history is. You know, the Great Barrier Reef is in Australia, and Australians should be incredibly proud of it. Absolutely. But we should all be incredibly proud of it. Just like recently, Notre Dame, you know, that's a French cathedral, but it's a cathedral that marks so much about humanity and humans. The World Heritage Convention, sadly, does not apply to outer space, and they can't be applied to outer space because you designate or the international community agrees that a site can be considered World Heritage, but it has to be within the territory of the person who designates it, of the state that designates it. So the United States can't say, oh, the Great Barrier Reef should be a heritage site. Only Australia can do that. In outer space, nations aren't allowed to own sovereign property. So by anybody saying, oh, this should be a site, then presumably you are asserting some sort of sovereign ownership of it, which is distinctly illegal or against international law in the Outer Space Treaty Article 2. So we're in this sort of odd place. We have this heritage, but nobody can claim it, because that would be a violation of law. And so at For All Moonkind, we're really working to fill that gap in the law and create another treaty that will recognize, just like the World Heritage Treaty, which everybody embraces, that similarly embraces our heritage in outer space. And we believe that then not only will that recognize sort of the universal value, these universal footsteps of our species into outer space, but it will help us continue to explore space in a unified manner as a species and not as separate nations competing with each other.
Of course, not all human heritage or human activities in space are that congenial. One thinks that just as the seas are clogging with plastic, there's an almost an infinite amount of detritus, isn't there, floating around in space because of the countless launches of satellites.
Absolutely. Orbital debris is a major issue. It's becoming a larger issue now, especially as more and more companies are talking about sending smaller satellites to create constellations. And there is a concern about the orbits becoming too crowded. Your own Australian Dr. Alice Gorman would argue a little bit with that, I think, because one person's debris is another person's treasure. And there are items in orbit that possibly should be saved as well. Maybe the grapefruit, the first U.S. satellite to orbit the Earth, is still up there. The International Space Station will be decommissioned. Should it be destroyed or should we protect it? The Hubble telescope, what a travesty it would be to lose that even when it goes out of commission. You know, that was an incredible human ingenuity and tool or symbol of human ingenuity. So yes, orbital debris is an issue. There's but the stuff on the moon is not debris. It's not causing a problem now. Certainly, as the moon gets crowded, it will become a problem. And we're not suggesting that every single item that goes into space needs to be preserved. We're simply suggesting that we need to manage the development of space and our exploration of space against the preservation of our history.
Michelle, the objects left on the moon are the responsibility of the nation that put them there. But of course, Armstrong's boot prints aren't considered objects.
That's exactly right. The Outer Space Treaty states very clearly that if a nation launches it into space, it remains under the ownership and control of that nation. And as I said before, the Outer Space Treaty also says you cannot own anything in space. So nobody can own that boot print, including the United States. What's happened so far is the United States has promulgated voluntary guidelines to say, please don't go within a certain radius of these sites because we would like to protect them and you shouldn't be coming near our objects anyway. And so far, nations have agreed or companies have agreed and they're saying, like PT Scientist wants to go back in 2020, but they've said, okay, we will make sure not to, we will make sure to respect your guidelines. But the problem is those are voluntary and they only recognize U.S. sites. We really need to recognize all of the sites. It's not just Apollo. Luna 2 is the first soft impact. It was a Soviet Union and it was the very first human object to hit the moon. Luna 9 was the very first human object to softly land on the moon and actually take pictures and send them back to Earth. These are all sites that need to be preserved, also because certainly the objects remain under the ownership and control of the nation that sent them, but we don't want the objects to be moved either. Archaeologists want to see the objects, scientists and engineers want to see the objects in situ so that they can study how they've been affected by the atmosphere, the lack of atmosphere that we know so little about at this point.
I also note that you have on your list the first wheel tracks of Apollo 17 and the golf ball of Alan Shepard. But there's other memorabilia, isn't there, along with scientific equipment, robotic landers and other objects left behind to lighten the load for the return trip. There are memorial and tributary items.
Absolutely. The Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin, I find this so moving. When they went to the moon, they chose to take memorials for the cosmonauts who had passed in the human effort to reach for the stars. So it really shows, sure, the United States was in competition with the Soviet Union, but humans were in this together. We were all working together to overcome the bounds of our Earth. The Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin also took messages of peace. on a disc, which was incredibly high tech for those times. But the NASA administrator sent out a note to as many nations as he could through their diplomatic channels, and 73 nations were able to respond in time to actually get their messages of peace etched onto a disc that was left on the moon, albeit it was almost forgotten to be left on the moon, but it was one of the last things they left.
I like your description of how at the last minute the disc was tossed from the ladder.
Yes, yes. The transcript is wonderful. They're re-entering the spacecraft, and I think Neil says something like, "Well, what about that stuff in your pocket? Did you get that?" And Buzz says, "Oh no, should I do it now?"
What's this about an Andy Warhol artwork?
So this is one of the great mysteries of what's up there. There is a rumor that a little tiny tile was inscribed by great artists, including Andy Warhol and Rauschenberg, the great artists of the time, and left on the moon with the Apollo 11 mission. Now, nobody's corroborated that, and the astronauts themselves have been equivocal about it. So we don't know. This is, again, one of the great things for archaeologists is did they leave it? Did they not? It has been said that the astronauts were so closely regulated that there's no way they could have brought it up. But there's things, you know, they wouldn't have said if they people wrote their names on the LEM, you know, things like that. What did these engineers do to memorialize themselves? You know, it's such a human reaction. I'm just going to scratch my initials here or something.
We've been doing that for millennia, haven't we?
Exactly. Yes. Cave paintings in Lascaux, right? So
I'm talking to Michelle Hanlon, who's the Assistant Director of Air and Space Law Program at the University of Mississippi. Your own organization, with its elegant pun, for all moonkind, what do you hope to achieve?
Boy, that's a loaded question, because there's one very simple answer and there's one very sort of rose-tinted glasses dreaming of the future answer. The short answer is 30,000 years from now, 3 million years from now, we want people to know, we want people to see the first boot print left by a human on another celestial body. And we don't want people to wonder the way we have to wonder, you know, why did those people in Tanzania decide to get up and walk on 2 feet? When we don't even know exactly when it happened. Why did humans figure out how to start a fire by themselves? When did that happen? We want to give to our children and their children and all of our descendants this information saved for them, so they don't have to go digging around to find it. We want that boot print preserved, and we want the history of it and the trials and the tribulations and the countless people who were involved in getting humans into space remembered in detail. So that's the short answer. And that the boot print, it's not just about the boot print. It's about all of the missions to the moon and all of the failures and successes we've had, because that is the story of humanity. That's the story of our evolution. And that is such an important story, and it's such an inspirational story. The longer answer is, we believe in order to have a sustainable community off of this earth, we need to protect our history, and we need to understand the universality of our history and of our future. This is really an effort also to bring the world together, move this concept of world heritage and the 193 nations that have embraced it, and bring that into space exploration with us.
You are the most remarkable woman. We have an award on our program, which we only give out occasionally, and you've just won it. It's called the Koala Stamp, because it's for people whose work or whose activities, whose energies are beyond and above the call of duty. Of course, we're not just talking about the US, are we? There's quite a lot of other stuff on the moon from other sources. Most recently, I suspect, a bit of debris from Israel.
That's right, Beresheet. What an accomplishment, though. The first private entity to reach the moon. I was ecstatic for them. Of course, it's not the landing they wanted, but boy, we have some more heritage up there now, and just so proud of all of us, for having the ingenuity to do that without needing a huge government space agency in their back pocket.
Tell us about the bag that Neil Armstrong used to collect rocks on the moon, because that's something that should be in some sort of international collection, but it's in private hands.
Absolutely, and it's really what galvanized us. We had sort of a baby steps plan to introduce For All Moonkind to the world, but we heard about this bag being auctioned by Sotheby's 2 years ago. It's the first bag used by the first man on the moon to collect the first moon samples, and moon dust samples, and it fell out of the property or the ownership chain of NASA purely by accident. It was being shared with museums around the United States. It ended up in a museum with a corrupt curator. The museum lost money. They had to put a bunch of stuff on sale. Nobody noticed what was on sale, and a woman bought the bag purely legally. She owned the bag. There's no question about it. She was taken to court by NASA. And the judges, you almost cry when you read the judge basically saying, there is nothing I can do. You know, U.S. government, you messed up because you let this bag fall out of the chain of custody. If I had that bag, I think she paid $900 for it. I would have been so proud to give it to the Smithsonian or, you know, someplace. Instead, she decided to sell it through the Sotheby's auction, and she received nearly $3 million for it.
Hasn't a lot of the moon rocks gone missing?
There's somebody I've been wanting to track down because they have gone missing, and there's a law firm or investigative firm out of Texas here in the United States that is actually hunting them down. So this is an interesting thing because, of course, the Soviet Union ended up selling a lot of their rocks, moon rocks, when they needed the money. And they actually sold their rover, Lunokhod 2, to Richard Garriott, an American. And so that's a really interesting concept for lawyers and archaeologists, because here you have the transfer of heritage to a private citizen. Now, I don't know what Richard Garriott's going to do with it, or if he plans to claim it on his own or something. But this is what's particularly frightening to us, is anything related to the moon will be bought, and will be bought at very high prices. And so you just need the wrong actor up there to grab the messages of peace, for example, and somebody down here will buy it.
I've got a lifelong passion for Egyptian archaeology, and I'm well aware of the fact that one of the great preservatives of the ancient past, going back long, long, long before the pyramids, is good dry sand. It tends to look after what's buried within it. And I wonder about the vacuum of space. That must be the perfect environment to preserve what's there.
Absolutely. And if you look, the Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter takes pictures of the moon, and it's been able to take pictures, and you can actually see the trail that the astronauts made. You can't see actual footprints, but you can see their foot trails. Those are not erased. There's no wind on the moon, you know, so those boot prints are still there. Now, of course, there's radiation. You don't have an atmosphere. So, for example, the American flags will probably be bleached white if they're still standing. The picture, Charlie Duke left a picture of his family, probably faded. And when the spacecraft took off, they probably churned up some dust and knocked some things over. So things will have been a little bit affected, but otherwise absolutely pristine. No humans, no rain, no wind. So we can actually go back and see pretty much exactly what Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin saw. Much exactly as they saw it.
We're talking to a woman who sees a future where humans are a multi-planet species. And yes, we need rules, guidelines, and agreements to achieve that. Michelle Hanlon, Professor of Aviation and Space Law at the University of Mississippi and co-founder and president of For All Moonkind. And for further information about their work protecting human cultural heritage on the moon, and one hopes beyond, we will post a link on the LNL homepage.